Welcome everyone to, I guess, is this the second to last presentation on the very, very last day? So we are really winding things down. The very fact that you're here means a lot to me. I really, really appreciate it. Because of, you know, the relatively small size and simply because this is something I like to do. If you have questions during the presentation, I really encourage you to raise your hand and ask as it comes to you. I will try to save time for Q&A at the very, very end, but as I said before, the slides are going to be available on SlideShare. They're always going to be available. This opportunity for us to have a dialogue is going to be pretty rare, so let's take advantage of it as it pops up. A little bit about me is that I've been with Apache for a while, worn a bunch of different hats. I love home growing, and I really have been involved with Apache HTTPD for a very, very long period of time. It's been a life changer for me, and really enjoy playing with all different aspects of the web server, you know, coding, and you know, at the very beginning it was the configuration, you know, aspects and stuff like that, a lot of shell scripting, a lot of C scripting, a lot of porting to it and stuff like that. But I guess the last several years, My focus and my interest has really been in the reverse proxy capability, mostly because it's for me, it's like it's the super cool part of what makes Apache separate out there. A little bit of a refresher on where we are with Apache HTTPD, and even though I know I shouldn't, I still say Apache when I mean Apache HTTPD. So please forgive me for that. Old habits are really, really, really hard to break. So if I ever just say Apache, in the back of your mind, add that HTTPD on the end of it, or web server, or something like that. I'm usually the person who really makes sure that people remember that Apache is more than just the web server, so I'm guilty of my own sins here. We've done a lot of improvements with Apache 2.4. If you were here at the previous session, I went into maybe excrementally bad detail as far as what we added. We've added a lot of performance and features, a lot of enhancements, a lot of capabilities and stuff like that. But the biggest thing that we've, I think, yes? Yeah, Motor Z is an NPM, a multiprocessing module, which was based on the simple. It's as bare bones as possible of an NPM. It's really not quite ready for production yet, but it works pretty well. And my hope is to have some time in some later on to really optimize it and get it ready for production. But it's a nice test playground and stuff. I'm sorry?
You need to compile with experimental to get it.
Yes, you do. You do need to compile with the experimental to get that loaded in as a loadable NPM inside there. And yes, that is an obvious reference to Engine X, Motor Z. Okay, sorry. I don't claim to be incredibly witty as far as that's concerned. But the biggest thing has been just, you know, also looking at Apache and the relating and the changing environment that it's inside, the impacts that the cloud is making to it right nowadays. It's really changed the way web servers have been used. It's also been changing the way web servers are surveyed, looked at, the implementation aspects and things like that, mostly because it's a very, very dynamic place, whereas in the old days, the most dynamic aspects of hosting and administering a website was being able to do a graceful restart. That was fantastic, that you didn't have to take a web server completely down, you know, and have this period of time when nothing was responding to it. Nowadays, even a graceful restart is woefully, in a lot of ways, inadequate what's going on. So because of the changes and the dynamics that the web pushes into the web server itself, it really makes a lot of impact when that web server is being used as a reverse proxy. It needs to be aware that it's living in a very, very dynamic place where the back ends change, back-end nodes are coming up and going away and things of that nature. And so the front end needs to be aware of that and needs to be very, very friendly in that type of environment. I want to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing. Canonically, you know, what we're talking about is a reverse proxy. Sometimes we'll just call it a proxy. In fact, the module is called mod proxy, and to save a word and, you know, two syllables, we'll just say a proxy. But it's actually a gateway, a reverse proxy, in which the reverse proxy, for all the world, outside world can see, is everything else. So as far as the outside world is concerned, nothing exists past the reverse proxy. The reverse proxy is the beginning and the end, the alpha and the omega of that web experience outside there. A regular proxy does the exact same thing, but as a client. The proxy looks like a client to everyone, whereas in a reverse proxy, the reverse proxy looks like the server, the only server, to everyone out there. Obviously, you know, the rationale, the reasons for having this kind of architecture that we're talking about here, this reverse proxy architecture, is that it provides a lot of security. If the only way to access these back-end servers, these application servers, or these content servers, or something like that, is this single point of entry, this reverse proxy server right there, then basically you can have this very, very uniform, bulletproof access control implementation inside there. So by focusing a lot of your security on that one central area, not that you have to ignore the back end, but there's no way for the outside world to see these back ends. So you need to harden them as you would normally any other server outside there. But as far as them being available for abuse by the unwashed public of the public internet, that's really not the case. So it provides a really nice central area to do security for your environment outside there. It also provides a centralized location for delegation and specialization and load balancing as well. And we'll talk about all of those aspects in the coming slides. Another big thing that's used in a lot of cases is that, especially now with HTTPS everywhere, that is the de facto standard. You want to be talking over a secure channel. It's really nice to be able to just have that communication right here and offload all that heavyweight overhead associated with SSL encryption and decryption at this point right here and talk clear text in the back end. Some back-end application servers are better or worse as far as being SSL compatible and stuff like that, but being able to offload SSL away from your back-end application servers and web servers in front is really good. The other idea is that it enables you in this architecture to take full advantage of caching, where static content and even dynamic content that can be a little stale or hasn't changed or something like that can be served right here at this point without having to re-grab it from the back end or regenerate it from the back end. So caching is another real reason why a lot of people go to a reverse proxy situation. And then performance and high availability are the other features. And as I said before, we'll talk about all of these. Some of the design drivers that were specifically into mod proxy itself was to become a very robust but semi-generic proxy implementation. Apache sort of like has that history, has that heritage of being like the Swiss Army knife for web servers, and we figured that people needed that kind of flexibility and freedom as a reverse proxy as well. We wanted to be able to support a number of different protocols, you know, how you talk to those back ends. And so we obviously include the normals, you know, HTTP, HTTPS, connect, but also the mechanisms that you would use to communicate to a back-end application server. You know, AJP for Tomcat, FastCGI and SCGI for generic applications on the back end, UWSGI for Pythons and other. And even if you're using HAProxy as your reverse proxy server, and you want to take that out and drop Apache HTTPD inside there and replace it we support the proxy protocol as well. We also figured out that the load balancing and clustering and performance were all very, very critical nowadays, because the architecture of everything is moving to having a reverse proxy outside there. Some of the other improvements is looking at support for WebSockets, you know, internally, as well as Unix domain sockets for communicating on the back-end endpoints. And we'll go into detail for basically all of these in a little bit. This is just a sort of like a snapshot. The biggest thing, the coolest fun thing that we'll be talking about is the support for dynamic configuration. Now, let's talk about actually how do you do this, you know, now that you've decided that you want to use Apache HTTPD as a reverse proxy, how do you set that up? Well, first and foremost, make sure that your configuration has set proxy requests off. Proxy requests is to support a forward proxy, the regular proxy, when you're pretending to be the client to other people out there. By making sure that it's off, you are closing a very, very bad security hole inside. So even though you're thinking, I'm using Apache as a reverse proxy server, I would need to put that on, it's actually off. So be sure to do that. And then it's just a combination of some magic configuration directives, basically proxy pass reverse, and possibly rewrite role. And we'll talk about those in the simplistic case, and then how you grow from there. So what does proxy pass do? Proxy pass basically says that for an incoming request, whose URL matches some pattern or some string, instead of handling that request here, send that request to a server behind me, a back-end server, a node behind me, and then they'll generate the response from that request, and I'll pass it through. So just think of it as sort of like passing the buck to someone, waiting for them to do the work, and then you send it back up the stream. That's basically what a reverse proxy does, is it channels requests from the outside world to some other server behind itself that will do the work, generate the content, grab the content or whatever. And so right here, what we're seeing in this situation is that any request that comes in, that the initial character string of the URL is /secure/, we're not going to be handling that locally. Instead, we will be sending that request as is to this back-end server right here and waiting for them to generate the content, which we will then push out to the outside world, to the client that was requesting it. This only works, this is only really, really good, assuming that this server right here is not available to the outside world. I mean, that's what you want reverse proxy to do, is to hide all that behind you and have the only way that any request can come in to the server is through the reverse proxy, not via a content or a client directly. Now, you can use regular expressions and things of that nature. For example, anything that's coming in that's a JavaScript scriptlet or something like that, instead of, again, handling that content here, handling that request here, send it to that back-end server. And you'll see, if you're familiar with regex, we're capturing that pattern and sending that pattern as part of this, this URL string right there. Any questions so far? Pretty simplistic. I'm sure this is way, way, way simpler and easy there than everybody knows. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Now, even though you can also do it that way, you can also use the I'm sorry. Hold on. Okay, much better. You can also use the location directive instead that says anything that comes in with that URL right there will go in the back. Perfect, thank you. So basically the idea is that you can either use proxy pass as a directive, which includes the URL and the remote host, or inside of this directive right here. Sometimes this is actually faster than using the previous method. And sometimes it's not. It's basically whatever makes the most sense for you. You can also negate passing something back by using the exclamation point or the bang that basically says, anything that's coming in for slash local, I do not want to pass backwards because I want to handle that locally. Anything else that comes in will be handled by a backend server. Because the directives are read and honored in the order in which they exist inside the configuration file, that says anything other than local would go in. If this was reversed, if proxy pass slash local was down here instead, then everything would be sent back to the backend server, and that would basically be a no-op. So, as you're doing that, and in fact, that applies for, everything. So make sure your ordering makes sense. Think in your head how you want that stuff to be passed in the back, and make sure the ordering of those proxy pass directives happen. Now, in conjunction with proxy pass, there is a little companion directive that also is usually paired, like 99% of the time, with proxy pass, and that's proxy pass reverse. And that has an extremely specialized use case, something that's specific for one specific thing only, is that sometimes the back end will send a response that says, okay, I know what you're looking for. It's not here, but I know where it is. Go to here instead. And it sends that information back in what's called a location header. That's a response header that's sent from the web server to back to the client. The unfortunate thing is that location header includes the full URL for the content on that backend server. It will be referring to itself. And what we want to do is maintain that illusion that that backend doesn't exist. So what proxy pass reverse does, it says, okay, if you see a location header coming from the backend that includes HTTP server, strip that out, use our local host name, and put that on the back end. So it's basically just there to maintain that illusion that nothing exists on the back end by handling that one exposure case where, because of the HTTP spec, the back end server may be referencing itself as part of the response. People might say, well, why do you have two different directives? Why not just, have that happen all the time? And as we'll see in some situations, there isn't that one-to-one match. Sometimes that URL right there or that URL right there will be different. And so instead of lumping it all together and breaking places out where they're different, we're just lumping them together inside of there. But most of the time, you'll see those two combined. No, because it's not really that secure. So here's just a very, very simple, complete environment. Basically, anything for images will go to a backend server. Everything else is fine. But what happens if this single server dies? Okay, isn't the whole idea behind having reverse proxy is to have at least some level of high availability, or even what's worse, or more likely, what happens if the traffic goes and that this server right here just doesn't cut the mustard anymore? It's just not powerful enough to handle the amount of traffic in here, and that's what load balancing does. Load balancing allows you to, instead of having this one-to-one match of a specific request for a specific single server, a set of servers, or a cluster of servers, or a balancer manager of servers and things aside there. And that's what this one single module right here does, Mod Proxy Balancer. It enables Mod Proxy to do that one-to-many mapping instead of the one-to-one mapping. And you can actually weight, or you can actually balance by a number of different load balancing providers. You can actually count the number of requests, one request for you, one request for you, one request for you, and so forth. Or 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1. So you can count by the number of requests, the amount of traffic that's going on, how busy those back servers are. And this is all done by this one directive right here called LB factors. And you'll see in a little bit what we'll do is we actually add additional load balancing mechanisms inside there. If you're familiar with load balancing, again, that's very, very familiar to you. So what we are doing right here in this situation is creating a load balancer cluster. And the cluster is that set of backend servers that are grouped together to respond to a single request coming in. And that's done by, first of all, using the proxy directive, this special name called balancer, and then the name of the balancer itself. So in this particular situation, the name of the balancer is called Foo, something very, very nice and original. And inside Foo, the name balancer cluster Foo, we actually have three backend servers, three nodes. We're calling them members inside here, but nodes or backends or whatever nomenclature you want to use is fine. WWW1, WWW2, and WWW3. Right here, we're saying that the load factor for WWW1 is 1, but it's 2 for number 2. So what does that mean? It says the WWW2 can handle twice the amount of traffic, because we're balancing by traffic, than WWW1. So if you look at the amount of traffic that's going on and you do a long-term survey, you'll see that WWW2 is getting twice the amount of traffic and generating twice the amount of traffic that WWW1 is. Presumably, you know, WWW2 is, you know, a 4 CPU or instead of a 2 CPU or something of that nature. Now, WWW3 is also part of this grouping. However, we have it on what's called a hot standby. We'll talk about that later on. But basically, it says that as long as one of these servers is up and running, don't use WWW3. So this is just a nice little simple scenario of how you would define this cluster. What is this group of backend servers that we'll be sending back here? Yes?
Going back to that example, so presumably it's going to resolve the www123 as DNS domain names and get an IP address up there. How often will it re-resolve those domain names as IP addresses?
Okay, the question was, right here we're using host names. You know, so obviously there needs to be a DNS, lookup involved. That is only done at configuration and start time. So if, for example, WWW2 would change DNS-wise, Apache would not know about it. It stores the IP address inside there. So if that is something that we're looking at doing, is making that's much more configurable such that it will redo a DNS lookup. Obviously, that's not something you want to do very, very often because DNS lookups are inherently something you have no control over. It can take a long, long period of time and things like that. Maybe like doing that asynchronously, on the back end might be a good idea, and those are things we're looking at. Great question. Anything else? Cool. These are just some of the parameters. I won't go into a lot of detail about them. We already saw, LB factor and stuff like that. As you would expect, you want to be able to retry requests on the back end. You know, hey, I sent you a request. You didn't respond. How long should I wait for a response? Well, that's a timeout, parameter, which comes up later on. And if you time out, should I try you again before I go and look for somebody else? That's the retry, value as well. So the idea behind this allows you a lot of freedom and flexibility to figure out in the bad case scenario, when the back end does not immediately respond, what should you do? Should you wait? Should you retry? Should you move to somebody else? And so we have a lot of capability that allows you to figure out what makes sense in your particular environment inside here as well. If you're a reverse proxy to, Tomcat, for example, sometimes you may need to flush that information on the back end just to make sure the back end receives the full information. That's really, really good for things that are binary protocols rather than text-based protocols. We also saw earlier that each backend, each node, each balancer member can have a status associated with it, and there are a number of different statuses. One is that it's disabled, for some reason it is down and it's been set procedurally as disabled. Hey, I tried to send you something and it didn't happen. I'm going to set you down as errors. Administratively stopped. You can take that server out of rotation. You can say ignore errors. We already saw the hot standby. There's also another scenario called a hot spare, where if any of the by default nodes stop responding, then it won't wait until none of them are available. As soon as one goes out, the hot spare jumps right on inside there. So that's relatively new. I guess it was in the last three versions or so, release versions. You can also, for example, if you want to take a backend node out of rotation, you can put it in a drain status that basically says, okay, I know you most probably are handling requests right now. Handle them all, drain all the information out of it, and once you're done, take yourself offline. And so in which case, it would go from a drain status to a administratively stopped status. And dynamic health check fail we'll talk about a little bit later on when we start talking about that capability. I won't go into all these details. I mean, you know, word charts and stuff like that is kind of nasty, but basically the idea behind it is that you can, for example, ensure that you're using sticky sessions. So if the design of your website or your web experience is such that you need to continue sending to the same backend and not do load balancing, you can set that parameter. There's actually a great example that I pulled from Daniel's slides from last year that show that. And let's see, just different configurations, different ways of setting these parameters inside there. Again, this is a quick review of everything. The documents are nice. One of the other things that we have added, especially useful if the NPM that you're using is the event or any threaded NPM. NPM is the multiprocessing module, or how Apache grows and scales and stuff like that. If you're using a threaded NPM, it makes sense to use a connection pool. So that way you're not constantly opening and closing a socket every time you need to talk to those backend servers. That can take, you know, especially if there are like firewalls and stuff like that in the way, a lot of time, a lot of overhead. So why not create a pool of open sockets, in which case Apache then say, okay, I need to talk to this back end. I'll look for an available socket in this connection pool and send it to the back end. As with any connection pool, you want to make sure that you can determine how many open sockets are available, the maximum, minimum, how long it should exist before it's retired, and things like that. And so we have the ability to be able to determine, from a procedure standpoint, just how large you want that connection pool to be and how long you want that connection pool to exist. Sometimes what will happen is that you want to, even though you have a connection pool there, you want to avoid using the connection pool. Basically, you want to tear down the socket after each individual time. Obviously, there is a performance hit associated with it. But what will happen is that occasionally, you'll have a backend server behind like some sort of strange firewall or something like that, and the socket will go down. The backend will, you know, close the socket off. But the firewall is unaware of it. So as far as Apache and the firewall is concerned, that socket is still available. And so when Apache tries to talk to that backend, you've got this huge latency because it's trying to talk to something that it and the firewall still thinks will be responding. So sometimes you'll just want to say, listen, in this particular environment, with this particular backend node, I know it's prone to that for whatever reason, whatever the network architecture is. It's much better for me to just basically create and destroy the socket all the time, and that's what the disable reuse allows you to be able to do. I mentioned sticky sessions before, and as I said before, the idea behind that is sometimes as much coolness as there is with load balancing and sharing that load between, sometimes because of the design of the architecture and the application, you need to maintain that connection. You need to make sure, you need to maintain state, that those requests coming in will always be going to the backend servers outside there. So we actually have that capability to be able to do that. This is the slide I talked about. I took this from Daniel. But basically you're seeing that to ensure that requests are going to the exact same server as is coming in, you're setting a sticky session. And what will happen is that only when that route has changed will that sticky session go away and it'll try to figure out someplace else to go. So even though the end goal is to share that traffic back and forth, you can also bypass that as well by using sticky sessions and, you know, the mod header, which is included module inside of mod proxy to add the sticky session cookie parameter right here, and then using the sticky session parameter inside of mod proxy. I mentioned hot standby and hot spare. The difference between the two, as I said before, is that a hot standby will not be used unless all the available servers are gone, whereas a hot spare will be used as soon as an available server goes away inside there. Now, sometimes what you'll want is something even more complicated than that. You want sort of like a cascading environment where you want to try a set and then another different set and things of that nature. And right here, I've got, and sorry for the eye chart, but it's basically the consolidation, you know, the holy grail of what you can do inside of with mod proxy and mod proxy balancer. Right here, we're basically defining two clusters, one foo and one called Java apps. Java apps will be talking AJP to the back ends, TC1 and TC2 or Tomcat servers inside of here. So any request that comes in for slash Java apps will be going to one of these two servers. TC2 will be taking four times the amount of requests because that's how we're balancing, that's how we're load balancing between them is looking at the number of requests. You'll notice that the actual values really don't matter. It's all normalized. This could be 1 to 40. It could be 2 and 8 or whatever like that. So whatever that ratio is what's important, not necessarily the numbers themselves. The top one is much more complex, but it really gives you at least a flavor or a feel of the amount of failover control that you have. In this case, what we're doing is anything that comes in for that request right here for slash apps will be going to one of these two servers right here. This is PHP 1 and this is PHP 2. This gets four times the amount of traffic than that one does. But we also have a hot standby, which is right here, PHP 3. These are all clustered together as what's called LB set 0. It's basically, that's one individual cluster of a number of other individual clusters out there. You don't see LB set defined here. By default, it's 0. So you don't set it up and Apache assumes it's LB0. We also have another clustered set right here called LB set one here, where we have that server right here. This one takes twice the amount of traffic. So the scenario that we're talking about is traffic comes in and it's being evenly shared between, well, not evenly shared, 1-to-4 share between these two servers right here. These are completely out of the loop. They're not seeing any traffic whatsoever, okay? This server goes down and traffic still goes back and forth to this because this is a hot standby. It doesn't kick in until both of those servers go down. Once that server goes down, once both these two servers go down, then and only then does traffic go to this back-end hot standby, PHP backup right here. Now what happens? If this one goes down, then and only then traffic goes to the next set, the next group of clusters, which is LB1, in which case it's then shared 1-to-2 between these two servers. Any of these go down, traffic still is maintained here, and then if both this and this goes down, that'll take over. So we can see how the cascading failure works by basically setting the number of the clusters and when we want those individual nodes to kick in. What's interesting is that just say, for example, things have gone to hell in a handbasket and all traffic is being handled by this server right here, and then PHP 1 comes back up. At that point, immediately, traffic all starts going back to PHP 1. So there's no cascading failure back up. It's like the first available server in the lowest number cluster that will take over inside there. So you can see how the flexibility happens. Now, also what's nice in here is you can see that not only can you combine these balancer clusters, but you can also still do the one-to-one mapping of a proxy bass. Where is that? Maybe I don't even have, right here. Anything for /foo just goes to a single server. This is the Unix domain socket that is going to be talking to. You can see on the back end we can talk not only HTTP, that's the communication protocol that we're talking to the back end, AJP with Tomcat. We can talk H2C, HTTP2 on the back end for anything that's dynamic. So that right there is a nice little snapshot of the capability and flexibility that you can do with Mod Proxy. Any questions so far? Yes?
Is there a way to do active-active route between OB sets?
The question was, is there a way to do active-active routing between LB sets? And not yet, but that will be coming soon. I won't go into mass reverse proxy, but basically the idea behind that is that sometimes you just have a one-to-one match of a URL space that comes in and a backend, a single backend server or a single backend cluster you want to send that to. In this particular scenario, we have 6,341 of these one-to-one mappings. Now, you can do that all in a nasty big old configuration file, or you can do it in a simple DBM or DB file that basically says for every request that's coming in for www.example.com, it's actually handled by that thing. The idea behind that is for things like where you're using a reverse proxy as a simple switchboard or for microservices or something like that, that's much easier to configure. Also, you change the DB file, and then Apache will immediately take up that configuration change. It doesn't require changing the configuration file and then doing a graceful restart. We've got a couple of ideas on how to also figure out how to balance traffic between the backend nodes. An experimental module is one called Heartbeat and Heart Monitor. The nice thing about the bad thing about this is that it used multicast to be able to send information behind between the nodes, and multicast is not really supported in almost any production level environment out there. But the nice thing about it is that it provided a lot of clues and ideas on some other ideas that we had. I think most probably the coolest feature of all this is the balancer manager, which allows you as the administrator or as an authenticated user to change the running configuration of Apache dynamically. So instead of having to change the configuration file and doing a graceful restart if a backend server goes away, or you want to add two or three more nodes or balancer members to a cluster, you can do that programmatically, by using this administration console rather than changing the configuration file inside there. So you can do a lot of really, really cool things. You can add new workers, new routes. You can change the load balancing, how your load balancing go by instead of by request to traffic. It can be persistent, so that way if Apache does go down, it can maintain that as you go through. It can be more RESTful, and it can be command line driven. So even though what I'm going to show you is the embedded administration tool, which is all web-based, all that's doing is just sending specifically crafted web GET requests to the back-end server. Very, very simple to set up. So let's see, this will be, I think this is I'm smart enough not to do real-time demos, so this should be the examination of what we're doing. So right here, as you see, we're going to the load balancer manager. These are the nodes that we have, and what I'm going to do is go to that particular server and disable it. And now it's been disabled. Automatically, Apache has now taken that out of rotation. Now what I want to do is change the load balancing mechanism, and it's immediately changed and went from by traffic to requests. Now what I want to do is add another node on the back end. You know, we just finally got that up and running. I'm setting the parameters. I'm setting the name, the full URL space of that back end server, adding it in. You notice that it appears, but it's automatically disabled. That enables you, again, to further fine-tune things. So you basically just click on it, you enable it, you set it, and now it's enabled. It's up and running. It's going to be generating traffic. Now, what happens if after all these changes, I stop Apache? Okay, right here, I saw that I turned Apache off. I went to the page. It's not up and running again. I turned Apache back on again. I'm going to go to the page. It started to respond. And you'll see that all the changes that we made in that previous session have been maintained and persisted through that startup period. So all the changes that are being done are persisted. And as I said before, that can all be done, you know, programmatically. You can have some sort of script on the back end, you know, doing surveys on what nodes are out there and changing those parameters. So in that way, that active can be somewhat simulated by having, you know, some sort of bot looking at those back end servers and then sending that change to Apache HTTPD. The other cool thing is that it's also server status aware, so you're aware exactly not only the state in which the reverse proxy is, but also how it's running, how it's operating, how it's performing. By the way, Apache is a fantastic reverse proxy server. Raw performance, latency, it just kicks the pants off of a bunch of servers out there. So definitely think about it, even though some web servers have really pushed themselves as reverse proxy servers, basically, in my opinion, so they rank up higher for things like, you know, Netcraft scoring and stuff like that. If you're in my previous one, you'll recognize this, but basically the idea is performance-wise, if you're looking at latency, the difference between Nginx and the event NPM for Apache is very, very similar. If what's really important to you is extremely low latency and consistent latency. So, you know, the standard deviation between how long it takes to get the response handled and sent out, this is using the prefork NPM, and you can see is that we have much more consistent performance, much more persistent, effective perceived performance on the back end. Well, the reason why is because with the event NPM or Nginx or anything like that, you're constantly seeing if there's more work to be done. So you're constantly, you know, waiting for an event to happen or working and checking and working and checking. You're not just going straight forward, I'm going to get this done. In the prefork scenario, you've got this one process whose only requirement is to handle the request coming in. So it doesn't have to wait for anything. It doesn't need to check for availability of services or something like that. It is dedicated to handling that. 100% blocking on everything it's going to do as soon as it's available. That's right. That's right. Great question. Another very, very cool feature that was added relatively recently are dynamic health checks. The reverse proxy would always, before it sent, well, not always, you could set it up, before it sent a request to the back end, do a quick little check. Hey, are you up? Oh, you are? Good. I'm going to send you a request. Which is good, you know, sometimes that takes some time that you may want to avoid. Wouldn't it be great if off in the background, those back-end nodes were always being checked for availability, such that Apache knew that whether a server was up or down without having to check for it beforehand. And that's exactly what this does. We'll basically have a watchdog process that goes to all the defined back-end nodes out there and can do a very, very simple TCP/IP check, make sure just the socket is up. I don't know what's running on the background. I don't know if what's running on the background is up and running, but it's a quick and easy way to make sure at least I have a socket available. You can also do basically an HTTP ping, which is an options call on the back end, which basically checks to make sure that the socket is up and running and that you have a web server up and running. It sends a response back. That's also fast, not as fast as a socket check, but still pretty good. You can also send a HEND request or a GET request. And the nice thing about it is you can actually procedurally figure out, okay, what am I looking for to determine whether a site or a server is up and running? And in this situation right here, we recognize a lot of this right here, which is basically defining those backend nodes. But right here we're saying that every, the default is, I believe, 5 seconds. So every 5 seconds, send a GET request to this server with that URI, and look for the expression in maintenance somewhere in the body. So it'll go to that server every 5 seconds, send a GET request to /status.php, and if the body of that response contains the words under maintenance, I know it's down. So I'm going to take that out of rotation automatically. Same way with here, with TCP/IP, I'm just going to do a quick little socket check to make sure you're up and running. I'm going to do it every 250 milliseconds. If it passes twice, then I'm going to put it back one rotation if it was out of rotation. If it fails 3 times, then that's when I'm going to take it out of rotation. And these have to be consecutive, concurrent ones. So again, we can just say, it didn't respond the first time. That's okay, I'm not going to worry about it. Second time, okay, I'm not going to worry about it. 3 times, it's out of rotation. So you can see that you can really do a lot of really, really cool checking on the back end to make sure that you're almost guaranteed that as soon as Apache needs to send the content on the back, it's out there. Yeah, sure, definitely.
So it looked like there was a positive and a negative health check. For example, you had OK
before and OK
down. I don't detect
the configuration. However, saying this is OK, so keep it in service. Oh, OK. It's not OK, so take out. Yeah, I don't know if go down is in the example. But right here, you'll see the expression is OK 234. And if the request status, when we're doing, because right here all we're doing is a head. We're doing a head request, just a head, slash. And if we get a response status, which is a 200 or a 304 or a 404 or something like that, then we're saying, okay, we know it's up and running. That's fine. That's the only thing we want to check for. The question was, is if it's true, is it in service, and if it's not, if it's not, then it's out service, and yes. Okay, it's got to pass that expression to be okay.
Okay,
if we get something else, then it doesn't match to that expression, and it's taking out of rotation. Very good question. Okay, perfect. 5 minutes left. As I mentioned before, we've got some other additional features which are either complementary to ModProxy or inside of ModProxy. One of the latest has been the support of HAProxy's proxy protocol. Again, the idea behind that is that if you want to standardize on just using Apache HDBD in your architecture and you have HAProxy in there initially as the reverse proxy, you want to pull that out, but you're dependent upon support for the proxy protocol. You can use Apache right there. There's been a lot of work on improved caching. As I mentioned before, caching is one of the major reasons why you want to be a reverse proxy inside there. So we support a number of very, very highly performant, really, really robust key value storage mechanisms. You're also now aware on what that status is, so you can actually figure out how big that cache is, how it's working, and things of that nature. Some of the things that we're looking at on the horizon is to extend ModProxy Express. That was that one-to-one mapping areas, adding additional protocols. One of the things that I've been working on off and on for a long period of time is this thing called ModProxy Survey, which is basically the idea behind it is that it uses what's called the survey protocol from NanoMSG, which is a BSD license. C module, that basically says Apache, the web server itself, will say, I'm conducting a survey. Who's out there? And all the nodes will be saying, oh, I am. I'm up. I'm responding to the survey. I'm up. And this happens continually. So the idea behind this is that as nodes go up and down, instead of having to even, you know, yourself figure out whether a node is up and down, Apache itself will do that. So immediately as a node comes up, it will respond to this survey request and say, yeah, I'm up. And Apache would say, oh, okay, great, I'll put you in a rotation. I'll add you behind the scenes as a node now to this cluster and make sure everything's aware to it. Because it's using Google's protocol buffers, there's a lot of other cool stuff that we can do when the nodes come up and down. It can, for example, say, okay, well, this is the kind of machine I am, so maybe you can, you know, set me as a, you know, LB set or a load factor of 4, because, you know, I'm really, really robust. It also allows you to do some really, really cool load balancing, because now that can become our universal, if you're familiar with mod log spread back long, long time ago, you have that capability of actually having this information that goes between the nodes, but also between the nodes and Apache inside there. As I said before, I've been working on that for quite a while. My hope is to drop that into a sandbox maybe in a month or so, get some other people hacking away on it, put it into Trunk, and then have that thing puppied over to 2.4. So in conclusion, use Apache. It's great. I love it. You will love it too, I promise you. Thank you, everyone. This is my contact information right here. Slides will be on SlideShare. If you are a home brewer, I encourage you to download my recipe for my Apache anniversary beer, which is a nice German Roggenbier. It uses some German yeast to give you that nice flavor. I'm using American hops, again, because it's because of Apache. I want that multicultural, universal kind of taste to it. It's very, very good. As I said before, I would have loved to have brought some with me, but it's almost impossible to get a 5-gallon keg shipped from Maryland to Las Vegas. So maybe there will be some other time. But if you're ever in Forest Hill, Maryland, look me up. I don't know if I'll have that necessarily on tap, but other things. And again, thank you very, very much. I don't think we have time for questions, but I will be here for the rest of the engagement. Thank you again for attending.